You might remember Bicklebrain, and these are me friends, Ruggers and Pergwick.
McQuiggick splashed at the water's edge behind Cormac. Cormac nodded to each in turn, wondering uneasily what this unexpected meeting might be all about.
We'll take you a tour. I'm not sure how we'll do it, but we'll find a way. But we got a price.
I have little, but what I have...
You know your way about out there. That's the price.
Cormac looked at him curiously.
The four of us are done with this rock, and have been for a long time. We're wanting to be gone from the lake, but we're not for knowing the land about. Been 100 years since I walked those paths, but for yourself, it's not been so long. So, we'll help you get your girl, and in exchange, you'll take us along.
My road will be south, no doubt. Out of Alpinador and into the Haunts land of Vanguard. Maybe even across the gulf and into Haunts proper itself. I'm not sure how well received a powry might be.
Oh, you take care of it. So start thinking on how we might get you to your girl, and then we're off of this rock called 6 or 5, if she's not to come.
Or 9 or 10, perhaps even 12, if her friends decide that they too wish to see the wider world.
Well, bring 100, 1,000, long as me and me boys get to get out of here and to places more interesting.
Deal.
We can find your son here at night, and we're thinking to go in one of the next few.
Cormac nodded. McQuiggick thumped his hands on his hips and walked off. Cormac retrieved his fishing spear. Oddly, he couldn't hit another thing the rest of the afternoon. They huddled in the cold on the glacial ice with little or nothing to eat or drink, growing weaker by the day. The fortunate ones continued to huddle in misery, for every couple of days one was grabbed from their midst and dragged to the crevice, to be wounded and lowered into the gorge as food for the beast that lay below. Ancient Baden presided over those ceremonies of sacrifice, and he seemed to truly enjoy it. How much like Bernivagar he appeared to Branson. The same feral look consumed him in those moments of inflicting agony upon others. The only other time they saw the ancient wretch was during the daily troll sacrifice. This was done differently, with several trolls hanged over the gorge with slit wrists so that their blood rained into the dark chasm. Branson noted every detail. His entire existence at that point centered around his mental acuity, as his physical limitations had only increased with the brutal conditions. He tried to put all his gestitude training and discipline to the side for the time being, as if he was storing it for one furious moment. That was his only hope. He had to find exactly the right time and hope that such an opportunity would present itself. On a gray morning, Branson knew his last chance lay before him. Brother Jean fought for him when the troll guards came to drag Branson away.
No! No! Leave him alone! I said leave him!
The trolls dragged him to the edge of the chasm. He lay helpless as Ancient Baden approached, carrying Branson's sword. This was his moment, Branson realized.
This one? No. No, if we feed him to the worm, he will likely infect the beast with whatever malady it is that so wrenched his limbs. Bring him south.
Ancient Baden started off in that same direction, crossed an ice bridge to the southern rim of the chasm, then walked off the 100 strides or so to the glacier's cliff edge. The trolls dragged Branson behind. Branson knew he had avoided sacrifice, but not execution. His resistance was not a conscious decision. It came from pure instinct, simple and unafraid, as only a man who realizes death is both imminent and unavoidable might discover. All of his muscles twitched in magnificent harmony, moving together for the first time since he had lost the Soul Stone, lifting him suddenly to his feet, his wrists and ankles breaking free of the hold of the four escorting trolls as he twisted and then hopped upright. He snapped a circle kick against the side of a troll's knee and slugged the creature in the jaw as he came around, launching it away. He leaped straight up as the other three closed on him and kicked out to both sides with perfect balance and stunning power. The remaining escort leaped onto Branson's back and began clawing, but the man executed a high somersault and stretched out to full extension as he came over, ending his turn so that he landed flat on his back atop the troll. Branson spun about as two of the first three came in at him. Suddenly, Branson felt the pangs of the stork within, the moment of Gesta II-inspired coordination fast fading. Worst of all, ancient Baden had taken note of the fight.
Die Macht!
The ice under Branson's feet suddenly turned to water, and he plunged down and only avoided continuing deep into the glacier by throwing himself to the side. Instinctively, Branson rolled himself out of the water, and a good thing that was, for it froze again almost immediately. Trolls fell over Branson, beating and clawing him. His glorious moment of concentration was lost, falling to the curse of the stork once more.
Do you see it?
Button reached down and took him by the front of his shirt and with surprising and terrifying strength hoisted him upright. Branson looked out a long, long drop, hundreds of feet and more, to a wide and long lake that was almost completely blanketed by fog.
Mithranadun. It is called that even by the Alpinadoran barbarians. A Samhaist name in this northern land. Do you know what that is? Because the magic of this place cannot be denied. Not even by the barbarians. Even they understand that our name for it, Mithranadun, is the most fitting. Even they accept that this is, as it long ago was, a Samhaist holy place. And yet it is not under my dominion. Not yet. Not until I wash away the vermin who have deceitfully come to call Mithranadun their home, as if any but the ancient of the Samhaist holds any claim on Mithranadun. The Great Worm does its burrowing work. The blood of trolls ensures that the god-beast's work is not reversed by the cold. And soon, Mithranadun will be cleansed. I cannot allow you to participate, I am sorry. But you will not share in the glory of my victory. My god-beast is too precious to me to allow it to eat you. Of course, none of this matters to you.
Ancient Baden threw Branson from the cliff.
Not in all me days. I ain't seen anything as stupid.
McWiggick pulled on the oar to compliment Bicklebrin, who was sitting beside him.
You're taking us to get cold, so we won't be getting cold.
It is cold acclimating.
It's called stupid.
You said you want to get off the island and the lake.
Get off and stay off, but not to sleep against the ice.
We might have to. Winter hasn't come in yet, but it's drawing near, and even this time of year can bring freezing winds and deep snows to the higher passes.
Oh, then we won't go to the higher passes.
Cormac knew that part of the dwarfs' agitation was due to the dramatic adventure they might soon be undertaking. He and his four Powries, along with Milkela, he prayed, and perhaps some of her friends, were bound to leave Mithranadun.
Shouldn't your lady friend be with us?
Shouldn't you take me to her so that I can find out?
In good time, when others' eyes ain't on you so much.
The more we get to the cold, the better. It will thicken your blood.
Yeah, acclimating. Stupid.
For all his complaining, everyone there knew well that he wanted to get away from Mithranadun as much or more than anyone else. Instinct replaced conscious thought as Branson plummeted from the ledge. Arms flailing, body twisting, the man's sensibilities were too consumed by sudden terror to consider his stork limitations. The Book of Jest resonated in his thoughts, and he reflexively twisted to get his arms nearer the sheer ice wall. Then those arms worked desperately, frantically, catching, grabbing, pulling, scraping. It took him a couple of heartbeats to align his sight properly below and put his arms in sync, reacting to the edges and bumps as he registered them. But once he found that balance and timing, he began to literally pick his path below him and devise the best strategies. He manipulated by the angle of his grabs and slaps and the constant twists of his wrist, and his handwork became more intrusive and stronger. He spotted one bigger ledge just below and reacted fast enough to hook his fingers a dozen feet above it, not to break his fall as much as to give him the leverage to turn vertical. His feet hit the ledge hard, his legs bent to absorb the blow, and he did not resist as he fell right over backward, having somewhat slowed his descent. Then his hands went back to work, and he kicked his feet against every possible jag as well, working furiously to counter the force of his fall. Then, some 24 feet from the ground, the glacial wall sloped in and away, and the already plummeting Branson could only freefall that last expanse. He knew that he was going too fast to attempt to roll out of it as he hit, so he flattened himself out horizontally and spread his arms and legs.
Ha! Looks like your eyes seen right!
McWiggig spoke as the group of four dwarves and Cormac came around an ice and boulder jag at the base of the glacier to see a man lying flat out on his back, driven more than halfway into the muddy ground.
I'm guessing that hurt.
Cormac, though, saw nothing funny in the tragic fall and rushed to the man. The man's strange black clothing made him even more curious, and when Cormac got beside him, the lightweight nature of the smooth fabric had him scratching his head, as it was totally unfamiliar to him.
Oh, yuck! But he's a tough one, huh?
He's alive!
Not for long. Better for him that the fall had snuffed out his lights for good.
Aye, that had to hurt.
Cormac continued to inspect the man, to try to determine the extent of his injuries. In truth, he was thinking that the most merciful thing he could do would be to smother this one and end his pain. But the more he looked, the more his estimate of injuries lessened. He pulled off his powery cap and set it over the man's head.
Oh, it's to take more than that.
Cormac ignored McQuiggick and kept moving the fallen man, one leg or one arm, or rolling him up to a near-sitting position.
I don't think he fell all the way.
But he buried himself half into the mud!
He could live. His wounds are not as bad as we expected.
Oh, you're not for knowing any such thing.
Nor are you for knowing that I'm wrong. This man can live. If I had a gemstone... We have to get him to Yersinfia. Help me now, without delay.
The Powrys all looked at Cormac incredulously, and none made a move.
Oh, we cannot just let him die! Oh, please! There is a chance I can save him! We humans don't just bury hearts and pop out of the ground again!
You'd be smart to watch your words.
I know. But it is important to me to try to save him.
What do you care?
I just do! Please, just get me to your son, Fier, that I can at least try to save him.
Yeah, but you're just wanting to take your girl along with us, again.
She already is coming with us by our agreement.
Then you're wanting her with us sooner, and we already told you.
She will be of great help to us. All of her people will. Save this man and help ourselves, I say.
We get near to your son, Fier. And we're to see the sky full of barbarian barbs. You think it's an easy thing, but you're a blind fool. Them barbarians see us coming and we'll all be dead before we step on their beach. Now, are you thinking that'd be a good thing for your flat friend here?
Cormac looked all around, feeling as if the answer was right there before him, waiting to be unveiled.
There may be another way.
You wonder why I have allowed you to live this long, huh?
Ancient Baden spoke to Brother Jean after having the monk beaten and dragged to him in the ice castle.
You would think that an Abelican monk would be my first victim, of course, since your church has been the scourge of the land these last 7 decades.
In fighting off the urge to respond, Brother Jean couldn't suppress a slight smile, and that only made Baden scowl all the more.
Dear Mox Bassoon!
The floor beneath Brother Jean's feet turned from ice to water suddenly, plunging him in.
Bassoon Nacht!
But not deeply, for Ancient Baden cut the spell short and reversed it, freezing the floor around Brother Jean's legs up to mid-thigh.
But I would so love to tear your limbs from your torso, or to open your belly side to side and slowly draw out your entrails. Have you ever seen the face of a man so tortured? It is the most exquisite mask of agony.
And you declare yourself a man of God?
Ah, so he speaks. I had thought you were mute, which would be an improvement for any Abelican, of course. I am not a man of your childish and benign creation, fool. I am a man of the ancient ones, of the truths of life and death. You are too cowardly to face those truths, so you cannot begin to comprehend the way of the Samhaste. I almost pity you and all the others born after Abel, who were raised in the echoes of his lies and false hopes.
Brother Jean narrowed his eyes, but his threat was so impotent as to be laughable.
I said, almost.
Baden waggled his necklace, and the ice gripped on Jean's legs even more tightly.
I keep you alive because you may be of use to me. As my arm is pressed...
Your hordes of monsters, you mean?
They serve a greater purpose.
They are...
If you interrupt me again, I will hurt you more profoundly than you have ever experienced. More so than anything you could ever have imagined.
Dazed, temples throbbing, legs aching, Brother Jean could not even bring a defiant stare to his face.
As my army is pressed into Vanguard and drive Dame Guaidra to Pyrrhic Vanguard, she will seek parley. As her principal consort is one of your feeble Abelican associates, your presence among my prisoners will grant me a greater ante.
The Samhaste bent low and stared into Brother Jean's face, and when Jean tried to turn away, Baden punched him hard, grabbed him by the chin, and forced him to lock stairs.
Does that please you? To know that you will help facilitate the downfall of your religion in the region of Vanguard? Nor will it end there, I promise. When the war in the Southland is ended, so too will be the tricks of your kin that so enrapture the dueling lairds. The reality of the conflict will weigh heavily upon the grieving people, and we will be there. For the Samhaste know death, while the Abelicans deny it. The Samhaste understand the inevitability, while the Abelicans offer false promises. That will be your downfall. What is your name? It is a simple question, one carrying great importance. For if you do not answer, I will bring in one of the prisoners and torture him to death before your eyes. It will be an hour of screams that will echo in your mind for the rest of your days, short though they will be.
Brother John Dumaulnay.
Dumaulnay? A Vanguard name, or of the Mantisarm, perhaps? Mantisarm. If you have been raised in Vanguard, you would better know the Samhaste way, and would never have fallen for the lies of the fool Abel.
Blessed Abel, the truth and the hope of the world. Who mocks the Samhaste death cult and your use of terror to control the people you claim to serve?
Claim to serve?
And you do not even pretend.
We show them the truth, and they may do with that truth what they choose. We bring order and justice to rabble who would eat each other if they were not instructed not to.
Justice?
Ancient Baden went silent suddenly and stood up straight, staring down at the ice-trapped monk.
I will see your demise, Ancient Baden. I will see the victory of Blessed Abel in Vanguard and throughout Haunts.
Ah, indeed.
Baden's arm swept across, slashing Branson's sword, drawing a line in Brother Jean's face and taking both his eyes and the bridge of his nose in the process.
I doubt you will see anything.
Ilkayla wasn't consciously thinking of anything as she walked on the beach this breezy night. Resignation filled her thoughts and filled her heart, so much so that she had abandoned her hopes of what might have been, in full knowledge that her reality simply could never approach those hopes and dreams. She didn't know how many days had passed since she had last seen her beloved Cormac. Too many, though, for her to ever expect to see him again. Either he had been found out as a traitor and imprisoned or put to death, or he had buried himself in guilt over his Stark actions and had abandoned his wayward course, a course that included Mil'Kayla. For several days, the woman tried to fashion some mental scenario in which she could lead her people to rescue Cormac. She allowed herself to fantasize about again besieging Chapel Isle and forcing the monks to relinquish their unfaithful brother. This could never happen, of course, and she didn't even know if such was Cormac's condition. So, in an act of resignation, and for the sake of her own survival, Mil'Kayla let it all go, exhaled and exorcised Cormac from her heart and mind. And always, Tanaka was there, looking over her shoulder, reading her emotions and reminding her, ever reminding her, of her responsibilities to the traditions. She was a shaman, and among the Alpinadorian tribes, that was no small thing. She walked to the beach, the wind blowing aside the mists enough to afford her a wonderful view of the starry canopy above. She walked at peace, until she saw a single light in the southwest. A boat, perhaps? She stood perfectly still and tried to not allow the movement of the small waves to distort her perception. After many heart-wrenching moments, she realized that the light was not moving. It shone from the sandbar. Mil'Kayla had to consciously breathe and steady herself. She started for the boats immediately, but her swift stride slowed as it occurred to her that the light could be a trap. Perhaps Cormac had been discovered as a traitor, had been tortured into revealing all. Perhaps a group of monks lit her and Cormac's private signal beacon to lure her to the sandbar and capture her. Those thoughts continued to swirl in Mil'Kayla's head even after she freed one of the smallest Yosunfier boats and started quietly paddling out from the shore. Her heart raced as she confirmed the light indeed shone from the sandbar or near to it, but she was a bit concerned that Cormac would burn such a light for so long on so clear a night. Certainly, it could be seen from Redcap or Chapel Isle, and after so many minutes, perhaps even some of Mil'Kayla's own people would decide to go and investigate. Of course, all of this was based on the presumption Cormac lit the light. Mil'Kayla gave one long and powerful pull with her paddle, then put it up and bent low in the small boat so that her silhouette wouldn't stand out against the horizon as she glided toward the sandbar. Peering through the thin mist, she saw a form, and the way the tall man paced left her no doubt her beloved Cormac strode the bar. She started to sit up, even to call out, but she bit back the call as she noted another form on the sandbar, short and thick. A Powry! Mil'Kayla sat up and speared her paddle into the water to create drag and slow the boat. Why would Cormac bring a bloody-capped dwarf to their private place? Despite her caution, Mil'Kayla couldn't turn away from this. Cormac's movement showed that she had been seen, and the man rushed to the point on the sandbar nearest to her.
Mil'Kayla!
He was waving frantically for her to come ashore, and she did. And Cormac wrapped her in as tight a hug as she had ever known.
Powries!
Quickly, here!
He took her by the wrist and dragged her along to the backside of the sandbar where an injured man lay on the ground, a second Powry beside him. As if that wasn't distressing enough, a third Powry sat in their boat, just a short distance away.
Cormac, what are you doing? Cormac!
We found him. You have the gemstones? He will die.
Who?
This man!
Who is he?
We found him at the base of the glacier, half buried in the mud.
We? You and the Powries?
Yes.
Cormac?
I was expelled from Chapel Isle, beaten and left for dead. This Powry...
McQuiggit's the name.
McQuiggit saved my life. They've taken me in.
Every dwarf needs a dog.
We were going to come and get you. We're leaving the lake.
You and the Powries?
A few, yes. But we found this man, and he will surely die.
Cormac reached for Mil'Kayla's tooth and claw necklace and twisted it out of the way to reveal the string of gemstones he had given to her.
Help me. I beg you.
Cormac reached to remove the magical necklace. Mil'Kayla instinctively bent and helped him do so, following Cormac as he rushed to the supine man, fumbling with the gems to find the powerful soul stone. He went to work immediately, pressing the stone against one egregious wound where the man's leg was swollen and possibly broken. Mil'Kayla bent low and added her strength to Cormac. They went to the next wound, and then the next after that, and with each application of gemstone magic, their bond tightened. They shared smiles after every victory, though they had no idea of whether or not these little bits of mending would win the largest battle of all and keep this stranger alive.
He's wearing your cap.
Magic in a powdery belly.
He fell from the glacier.
And somehow he is not dead. The mud, I guess, for the ground at the glacier's base is soft.
It is a long fall.
And yet, he lives.
They had worked their way up over the most obvious wounds by that point, and Cormac put the soul stone on top of an area of swelling on the battered man's forehead. Again, he sent the gemstone's magical energy flowing into the stranger, and again Mil'Kayla put her hand atop his to help. But then, the supine man did likewise. His hand snapping up to grab Cormac by the wrist. His eyes popped open wide, and Cormac instinctively tugged away.
No!
The monk and Mil'Kayla had moved too forcefully for him to prevent them from pulling the stone from his forehead, and as soon as that happened, he lost all strength, and the two healers fell back staring at him.
I think you forgot to put his brains back in.
Jim!
I'm thinking he lived by landing on his head.
He wants the soul stone.
The poor man.
The stranger kept stuttering and drooling and shaking so badly that he seemed as if he would just collapse.
Give it to him.
Cormac looked at her incredulously.
He cannot run away with it.
Cormac reached out and put his fist, clenched over the soul stone, in the stranger's shaking palm. As soon as the man tightened his grip about Cormac's fist, Cormac relaxed his grasp and let the gemstone fall to the wounded man. Shaking fingers immediately stilled and closed over the gemstone, and the wounded man lay easily on the sandbar.
I think it killed him to death.
Then the man reached his hand up and pressed the gemstone against his forehead.
Ah, or not.
Well found in a dark place, and know that you have my eternal gratitude. I am Branson.
They hadn't hit anything vital, he believed. The wound was not mortal. It hurt, though. How it hurt. And it was all poor Olcona could do to turn his focus to his surroundings and not the cut in his belly. He had managed to secure a knife. He surely would have preferred a sword, but the knife he had hidden away in his boot would have to suffice. He couldn't deny his fear as the giants lowered him head down into the ice chasm, a thick rope tied tightly about his ankle, but Olcona had spent the better part of his adolescence and all of his adulthood in battle and had faced tremendous odds again and again. He brandished the knife. He forced himself to extend downward and stretch the wound as he couldn't hope to battle whatever beast might be down here while doubled over. It was darker now, for he was well over 100 feet down from the ledge, but not pitch black. Olcona forced himself into a slow turn, taking in the myriad edges and jags of the chasm walls, trying to pick out a shape among them that foretold something else.
Faster!
He wanted to be on the floor and free of the rope before this beast appeared. The beast smelled his blood, just as that old wretch Bodden had predicted before he had stabbed Olcona in the belly. Olcona slowly turned at the end of the rope, his gaze passing the long and open stretch of corridor. He noted a movement down there, a quick glimpse of something large, something awful. He tried to battle his momentum, to stop and face the beast, but he kept turning. He managed to twist about to catch a few quick views of the approaching monster. It looked like a gigantic worm, or more accurately, a caterpillar for the many small legs scrabbling at its sides. Great mandibles arched out in semicircles before its black, round maw, the type of toothy orifice often found on sea creatures, which seemed to pucker as much as open.
Faster!
As if on cue, The rope stopped. He hung there, 20 feet from the ground, too high to try to free himself, for the fall would surely leave him helpless in the face of the monster, but too far, he believed, for the approaching beast to get at him. He managed to steady his turn properly so that he could face the crawling nightmare.
They'll let me bleed out here, above it!
Alcona decided then that if the worm came up under him, he would cut free his ankle and drop upon it, all caution be damned. But the worm reared up like a cobra, and before Alcona could even appreciate the fact, it lashed out. Alcona tried to respond with a dagger, but so shocked was he that he didn't even realize that his weapon arm was gone until he saw it disappearing into the awful beast's mouth. There was nothing else, just the pain and the helplessness. That was the worst of it for a man like Alcona. Cormac sat on the rail of the beached boat, his shoulders slumped as if all of the air had been sucked out of his lean body. Before him, Milkayla paced nervously back and forth, continually glancing at the surprising man in the black suit, the man who had just informed them that their entire world would soon be washed away.
Are you to let him keep the Soul Stone?
It is your stone. I would counsel that you let him keep it. It is the most important of gems, I agree, but if what Branson says is true, then he is all but helpless without it.
And with it, he walks with the grace of a warrior. I believe his every word.
Milkayla turned to see Cormac nodding his agreement.
It is too outrageous a story to not be true.
We have to tell them. All of them. Your people and mine.
And even McQuiggicks. At the very least, Mithranadu must be abandoned.
A wall of falling ice to wash us all away.
On pain of death!
Out on the rock collection detail, Giavno and his two companions had been the first to note the approach of Cormac and the strange-looking man in the black suit of some exotic material.
Greetings to you, too.
How can you be alive?
Cormac tapped his beret.
God's will, and good luck, I would say.
You know nothing of God.
Says the man who whipped him nearly to death. A godly act indeed. At least according to the mores of many Abelicans I have known. It is strange to me how much like some Aists they seem.
Giavno trembled and seemed about to explode. Behind him, over the rocky ridge, a swarm of brothers rushed toward the rocky beach.
Why did you come here, Cormac? You know the consequences.
You thought me already dead.
A death you earned with your treachery.
Your definition, not mine. I followed that which was in my heart. And many of the brothers here, I would wager, were glad of it. I find it difficult to comprehend that I was alone in my distaste for our imprisoning of the Alpinadorans.
What you find difficult to comprehend is that you make no rules here, or anywhere in the church. If Father de Gilb wished for your opinion on the matter, he would have asked, and he did not.
Ever the dutiful one, aren't you?
Alive?
Father de Gilb, surrounded by an armed entourage, appeared over the crest of the hill.
Are you mad to come back here?
How would I know differently? I remember little beyond the sting of your mercy.
Play not coy with me, traitor. Take him!
I would not.
Father de Gilb dropped a withering gaze over him, except he did not shrink back in the least.
And who are you?
My name is Branson, though that is of no consequence to you. I am a man here, not of my will, but of misfortune, and I come to you only to repay the debt that I owe to this man, and to the people of some of the other islands. I bring a grave warning that your world is about to be washed away. It is my duty to tell you that, I suppose, but whether you choose to act upon it or not is of little consequence to me.
One of Father de Gilb's entourage pointed at Branson.
He has a gemstone!
Cormac glanced at Branson in alarm, but the man from Pride Town seemed bothered not at all.
Is this true?
If it is none of your affair.
You walk a dangerous...
I walk where I choose to walk and how I choose to walk. Feign no dominion over me, disingenuous old fool. My father was of your order, a brother of great accomplishment. No, not of any accomplishment that you would understand or appreciate. And more to your pity.
From Entol.
Your swarthy appearance bespeaks a southern heritage.
Pranson grinned knowingly at the obvious ploy.
It matters not. You are here with a criminal and carrying contraband.
Contraband? You presume to know how I came across this gemstone. You presume that I have a gemstone. You do not understand Gestatu philosophy, yet pretend that you have any understanding of me, or what I might do to your gods if you send them forth, or how I will come back in the dark of night and easily defeat any defenses you construct. That you and I will speak more directly at your own bedside.
What have you brought to us?
A man to deliver a message, and then we are gone from here.
The glacier north of your lake is home to a Samhaist, the Ancient himself. Ancient Bodden, who wars with Dame Gwydra Vanguard.
How do you know?
Because I was there just yesterday. Bodden claims dominion over this lake and works to ensure that all here, yourselves included, and especially if he should ever learn that Abelicans reside on this most holy of Samhaist places, will be washed away on a great wave of his murderous wrath. If he executes his plan, there is for you no escape. If he is not stopped, this place you name as Chapel Isle will become a washed stone on an uninhabited hot lake.
Preposterous!
Branson shrugged as if unconcerned.
We are to believe you. You come to us beside a traitor.
A man I hardly know, but one possessed of more sense than you, it would seem. I have come to deliver a message as repayment to this man you name as traitor, and yet who feels obligated to you still. Whether you act upon that message or not is not my concern. I hold no love for your church. Indeed, from what I have seen, you are more than deserving of my contempt. But I am Jester too, and so such feelings as contempt have no place in my world.
Jester too? What is Jester too?
Something you could never begin to comprehend.
Take them!
A pair of guards, brandishing short swords, leapt at Branson and Cormac. Branson quickly disarmed both men, sending them to the ground unconscious.
You have been warned. Ancient Bodden will destroy you.
Cormac lingered a short while longer, looking mostly to Father de Gilb. His expression was one of apology, perhaps, but mostly it was filled with pleading. But there was no more to say, so he followed Branson back to the boat. Both Cormac and Milkayla accompanied Branson onto the forested island of Yosan Fier. Many more people came out to greet them before they even got their boat ashore. The whole of Milkayla's tribe, it seemed, came down to the waterfront, shielding their eyes from the morning glare. Many scowls focused on Cormac and his obvious Abelican attire, but Andrusis was there, along with Tonakay and Canrak, instructing his kin that this particular monk was no enemy of Yosan Fier. As the trio glided in near the beach, strong hands grabbed the craft and ushered it up onto the beach. Tonakay stepped front and center before Milkayla as she exited the boat, the higher-ranking shamans deferring to him because of his intimate knowledge of this situation and these participants. He stared at Milkayla for just a few moments, then scrutinized Cormac, his expression giving the man no indication of how much his actions had ingratiated him to the barbarians. Then, Tonakay's gaze fell over Branson, but only for a moment.
What do you presume? Do you believe that your friend has earned the right to step onto our land simply because he, unlike so many of his kin, took a moral road? Do you think that all past wrongs will be simply forgotten?
It was at great personal cost. But that is not why we have come. Cormac signaled to me and I answered his call.
Signaled? And how did he know a way in which he might signal you, Milkayla? And how did you know how to answer him?
He stopped and waved his hand and shook his head. His point had been made that the woman would surely have to answer for her apparent secret relationship with this Abelican, but Tonakay was more interested in hearing Milkayla's tale at that time.
Why is he here?
Cormac found this man, Branson.
The man in the black suit nodded, though he obviously understood little of the conversation.
Branson fell from the glacier.
Then he would be dead.
But he is not. Whether through simple luck and soft mud or his extraordinary powers, and he is truly blessed, I know not. But he is here, and he was up there, and he comes to us with a dire warning. The Ancient of the Samhaists has taken the glacier as his home, and plots now to destroy all of us who dwell upon Mithranodun.
Sam hastes. This stranger is from outside of Mithranodun? Strange, then, that he arrives just a few years after the Abelicants. Before them, none had come to us from the outside since the Powrys, before my father's father was born.
He is not of my former comrades. He is no Abelican, and has only been to Chapel Isle on one occasion, yesterday, to deliver the same message there that we deliver here. This is no trick, Tonike. On my word, for what that is worth to you, I found this man in the mud on the northern bank of Mithranodun, injured. He came to us with a tale that you must hear, that my people must hear, that the Powrys must hear. For if he speaks truly, and I believe that he does, then all of us are in dire peril and will soon be washed from our homes.
Tanake stared hard at Cormac for just a few moments and then motioned to some of his nearby tribesmen. Soon the trio found themselves surrounded by armed Alpinadorian warriors. Cormac immediately turned to Branson and grabbed the man by the arm.
They are honorable, but careful.
I insist that you remain with us while we investigate your claims.
Be fast, for all our sakes.
Tanake nodded his agreement and motioned to the warriors, who escorted Branson and Cormac to a nearby hut, while Milkela stayed with Tanake and the other shamans. She knew what they would do, and was not surprised when several of the more powerful shamans called down high-flying birds. Weaving spells, they each bound their sight to that of an individual bird, then sent the winged creatures on their way, and for the next several minutes, the powerful elders saw through the eyes of their familiars. Unlike ancient Baden's heightened powers, though, these shamans couldn't control their familiars, and so they were at the whims of the aerial creatures. Still, it didn't take very long for more than one of the birds to climb above the glacial rim, and the ice castle gleamed in the midday light. To her surprise, a most pleasant one, Milkela was allowed to leave Yosan Fier with her two companions. She had not been forgiven, Tanake assured her, and would ultimately have to answer the many questions her arrival with the men of Hans had raised, beyond the worries of some strange ancient plotting atop the glacier. Now, though, given the revelations, they all had more important issues before them, so Milkela, Branson, and Cormac paddled off for Redcap Island, while Tanake and the others plotted as to how they would best bring all the Alpinadorian tribes of the islands together again in an even more urgent cause. Father de Gilb rubbed his face and leaned back in his seat, breathing hard.
It cannot be!
Exactly as the stranger said.
Father de Gilb tossed a soul stone back onto his desk, the same stone that had just allowed him an out-of-body journey where he had willed his spirit to fly up to the great glacier looming over Mithranodun.
They are boring a chasm that will collapse the front edge of the glacier into our lake.
Ancient Baden?
It can only be. The castle of ice has the Samhaste tree design.
Then Cormac was not lying, and the stranger is...
Of no concern to us at this time. We must be gone from this place post-haste. Our time here was not profitable. We claimed not a single soul, and so we will continue our mission elsewhere.
We will allow ancient Baden to destroy the lake and all who live upon it.
What choice have we, brother?
Brother Giavno trembled and lifted his hand several times as if about to divulge some plan, but alas, he had no answers.
Prepare the brothers. Prepare the boats.
The differences between the reactions of the three peoples were not lost on the foursome of Branson, Cormac, Milkela, and McWiggick. In fact, the reaction of the supposedly vile Powrys as compared to that of the humans proved startling to the two men and Milkela.
Yeah, but you done good!
Kriminig, the Powry leader, congratulated McWiggick after he had led Branson and the others to his boss so that the stranger could tell his tale.
That beast up there's thinking to be dumping on us when we're not knowing. But now that we're knowing, we're the ones to be doing the dumping.
You know of ancient Baden?
You just tell me of him!
He believed us without reservation.
Or maybe he is just happy for a fight.
Bah!
but I'm sad to hear this killer surrounded himself with trolls. Their blood's not much for shining me bray.
Aye, but he's got a swarm of them, they're saying. We'll get the glow out of it. The folks in the other islands won't be needing their share, don't you know?
Yeah, and there'll be bunches of them folks about too, won't there? More than a few are going to be bleeding bright red.
And who's to say they won't be turning on us when the killer's chopped down?
A few hundred trolls and a few hundred men, and only 20 of us. It'll take me all the day to collect the blood.
They swatted each other on sturdy shoulders and rolled along their way as only Powrys could. The last comment had brought a look of alarm to both Milkayla and Cormac, though, until McQuiggick and Bicklebrin shuffled over.
But don't you be thinking me killer to start any trouble up there other than the trouble that... What did you call him, the ancient? No trouble, I tell you, other than finishing the trouble that one's already started.
They are willing to fight beside the monks and the Alpinadorans, then?
You heard Krennig say just that. Oh, sure, and a fine road will be for all we're hoping. Though we're not even knowing if your monk's coming along for the play. Did you hear him say that?
Cormac's lips grew very tight. All the confirmation anyone there needed to understand that he was filled with doubts about whether his brethren would march alongside the rest or not.
Ah, but it's not the matter. The ancient up there has made himself an angry swarm of Powrys, and we're meaning to show him that doing so wasn't the smartest thing he's ever done.
I hope he's not too old and withered. Me Barrays needing a bit of a gloss.
Brother Giavno stepped out of the small boat onto the shore of Lake Mithranadoon for the first time in more than a year. He glanced back in the direction of Chapel Isle, the place that had been his home for these last few years. Not much of a home, and not much of an island, Giavno knew. But still, there was in his heart a great lament, a profound sense of loss. Nothing more than a cursory glance at his dour companions told him that he was not alone in these feelings. He let his gaze drift north along this, the western coastline of Mithranadoon. Cormac was up there, he knew, along with his strange collection of friends, and perhaps with more allies culled from the various islands. He meant to go against ancient Baden, and that was a noble cause, whatever the reason. The last boat bearing Father de Gilb and a foursome of Chapel Isle's best warriors neared the shore. As the five debarked, Giavno was left wondering how many years, decades, centuries even, might pass before the construction of Chapel Isle was once more inhabited by disciples of Blessed Abel. Their monument would stand against the wave should it come, Giavno believed, and even if someone else, Powry or Alpinadorian, happened upon the island, they would more likely use the sturdy chapel fortress than tear it down.
Form them up at once, and let us be far away from this place. I would find Dame Guaidra before the onset of winter, and that will be no easy road.
Of course, Father.
Part of Giavno agreed. Another part, though, had him looking to the north yet again, and wondering about Cormac and the others.
Brother Giavno!
Giavno nodded and rushed off to rouse the brothers. He was glad that it was not his place to make these decisions. They glided out of the mists of Mithranadoon like the ghosts of their warrior ancestors, painted with berry dyes of red and yellow and blue, carrying spears and clubs and decorated with trinkets and necklaces of teeth and claws and paws and beaks and feathers. So many feathers. Their flotilla numbered boats in the hundreds, each boat carrying as few as one or as many as a half dozen of the proud Alpinadorians. Most stood up as the boats reached the shore, as if in defiance to the task and enemy that awaited them. Even Milkayla, intimately familiar with her people, even Branson, who had seen the armies of southern Hans, even McQuiggick, who was never much impressed with anything human, gasped at the spectacle of the many diverse tribes of Mithranadoon coming together as one. And for Cormac, this marvelous sight served to reinforce his understanding that proselytizing these people with their traditions, heritage, and pride was no more than a fool's errand, and a condescending one at that. For Milkayla, though, another emotion accompanied it all, based on her certainty that she was looking upon her people for the last time, likely forever. Even if she managed to survive the coming battle, she knew that it was over for her. Her small group of friends, co-conspirators dreaming of leaving Mithranadune only 2 years before, had been split apart from her in more ways than physical. She stood with the man she had come to love, but inside, Milkayla had never felt more alone. Still, the spectacle before her made her proud to be, or to have been, of Jan Osum. At the center of the Alpinadorian force came the shamans, Tadru and Tanake prominent among their ranks. More than just spiritual leaders, Alpinadorian shamans were considered the wise men of their respective tribes, the advisors on all matters important.
They will direct the attack.
They will likely wish to speak more with Branson then, as he has seen the passes and the glacial structures.
They have seen them, both the way to Baden and his defenses. If we were to be a part of their execution, they would have summoned us as they debarked their boats.
What's that to me? I'll call all me boys together just to be a part of it!
Milkayla calmed McWiggick with an upraised hand and cautiously made her way along the beach to speak with Tanake.
The Powries wish to help. They have brought the whole of their force to join in our march.
Our march? You have plotted to leave us and conspired of late to expedite your journey. Because you brought us this information, Shaman Tadru has seen fit to grant you your wish without prejudice or punishment. You have paid your worth to us and are free to go.
Milkayla looked over to her tribesmen, trying to sort through the jumble to spot Andrusus or some other friend who had expressed similar desires of leaving Mithranadune.
Your young friends will not be joining you. They have offered no compensation for the freedom they desire. Not even Andrusus, though there was debate about whether or not he too should be given free leave. I would have thought this news exciting and welcome to you.
Of course. The Powries have come in whole to join in your battle with ancient Baden. They are fierce allies and ferocious enemies, as you are well aware. They would know their place in this, among a force so many times their size.
How generous of them. Better than the cowardly monks, at least, who debark far to the south and run down the road of the same direction. They stand strong only behind thick walls of stone, it would seem.
Their place?
They have no place among us. If they wish a place in the battle, then it is to the side and out of the way. We do not train beside Powries, nor are we to expect our warriors to trust any of them. The same is true of the monk and the stranger.
And of Milkayla?
You trained beside us once.
But the trust?
Their place is not among us. They, you, all of you, would do well to stay far to the side of our march.
They were not properly outfitted to survive the climate off Mithranadune, so the Alpinadorians, led by their shamans, who had used the views of eagles and hawks and crows to spy out and map the passes, wasted no time in their march. Long and swift strides carried their formations up the mountain passes beside the glacier. There would be no camp, no respite. Their swift pace would end when they met the enemy. Behind them came the Powries, and among them Branson and his two now homeless companions, still trying to figure out where they would fit into this upcoming battle. Before they had even reached the glacier, sounds of fighting erupted far ahead, at the front of the Alpinadorian line. The ranks tightened, Powries eagerly adjusting their berets, but those ranks quickly loosened up again, and when the trailing group crossed the battlefield, they discovered that the army had happened upon and had summarily overrun an encampment of no more than a dozen trolls.
Here's to hoping that one or more of them got away to warn their friends and set them all about us. Sure to be the only way we're to find any fighting this day. Aye, the tall ones will run all the way through Baden's door.
Branson glanced at Milkayla and Cormac, the three of them understanding that they were the only ones among this group who hoped the prediction would prove true. And Branson, who had been at Baden's camp, who had seen the hundreds of trolls and the giants there, knew it to be an unrealistic hope, and one that would soon enough be destroyed. Good fortune gave Branson and his companions a fine vantage point as the real battle commenced. The path wound down and around a huge outcropping before spilling onto the glacier and the Powry contingent. Branson's trio among them, was up high and still back of the stone when the leading Alpinadorian swept onto the ice like a breaking wave, washing over those nearest trolls before smashing into a more coordinated defensive formation. The Alpinadorian warriors poured over the front troll ranks, their towering line of broad-shouldered men and women, most well over 6 feet in height, dwarfing the diminutive, light-featured trolls. But the trolls did not break and flee, and those in the back scrambled all over each other, trying to get to the front ranks and into the fight. More barbarians swept onto the glacier, lengthening the line and filling in the holes as some of their kin fell away. In the back, watching from on high, Milkayla chewed her bottom lip, her knuckles whitening about the handle of the stone axe she carried.
They are winning!
Yeah, but we're not even to get to the ice before the fight's done.
Aye, and all that fine spilled blood will seep into the cracks by then.
Pergwick and the young Ruggers hopped over to join McQuiggick and Vicklebrin and the humans.
Or mixed with the scraped and melted ice to be even thinner.
Come on, you bleating sheep!
As they turned to regard the shouter, he waved them his way. Apparently, they weren't the only ones concerned that the fight would end before their arrival, for before that yelling dwarf, a line of Powrys was going over the ledge and out of sight. Picking their way, the group learned when they got to the spot down a steep but climbable descent that would get them out onto the glacier just to the south of the Alpinadorian position. Glancing over the ledge and following the line of Powrys climbing down, Branson could pick out the point of demarcation. Few trolls stood in that area of the glacier, focused far more heavily to the north than the barbarians. For a brief moment, Branson's eyes flashed wickedly, wondering if the enemy had left open a flank they might exploit. But as the leading Powry dropped down the last few feet to land upon the ice, Branson's excitement turned to dread. A rain of heavy, large stones complemented the dwarf's arrival. The northern left flank, far from open, had been charged to the giants. Half a dozen of the behemoths, standing tall now behind a wall of ice blocks that had obscured their position. With their light bluish skin, white hair, and wrappings of white fur, they blended well with their shiny and eye-stinging environment. But that camouflage did nothing to diminish their overwhelming aura of strength now that they had been spotted.
Giants!
Ha! I'm a giant!
Not like the giants we got on the Julianthes.
Oh, not half! But I'm betting their blood runs thick!
You do not seem convinced of your cause.
I came here to buy freedom for myself and my family. Baden's head for a journey south.
We'll make sure that you get the Foul One's head then.
All who came north with me are lost, either dead or trapped in that castle. Dame Guaidra would not refuse me my reward, even should I return now, before the task is complete.
But Baden must be stopped.
Branson looked at him skeptically.
Do you deny his evilness?
Not his, nor that of your church. Not of the Laird's. Not one of them.
Cormac stiffened at that poignant reminder of the lack of familiarity between them.
Then you agree that he, Baden, is worth killing?
That is not the question. The question is Baden worth dying over?
He is.
Cormac started over the ledge, moving swiftly down the steep decline. Milkayla shot a disappointed look Branson's way and followed. Branson passed them easily, using his gestitude training and his marvelous control of his body to run down the cliff. By the time Branson got down to the ice shelf, most of the trolls were either down or scattering, and more than half of the Powry contingent was already in a full sprint to the edge of the chasm just south of their position. Both their courage and commitment stunned Branson, for not only were they charging headlong into the waiting giants, but they were putting themselves into a position where they would be afforded one less avenue of retreat, where, if the battle went badly, they would find no escape. The surprise and confusion over their level of commitment nearly cost Branson his life as a troll spear flew in for his side. Branson flipped his hand and snatched it from the air. He sent the missile back out at the nearest troll. Branson turned around just in time to see a giant topple over, grasping both its knees. The Powrys wasted no time swarming over the behemoth with glee, stabbing it and slashing it and wiping their berets across the wounds. Branson's jaw dropped open in disbelief as he lifted his gaze to view the fight beyond the fallen giant, to where a group of Powrys was rushing to and fro and back again, in and around the legs of a futilely swatting giant who never got close to hitting any of them. Oh, but they were hitting the giant. Other Powrys joined in the dance, chopping, always chopping at the giant's legs. Down it went, to be swarmed and finished. Branson remembered his feelings upon first seeing the giants, how puny and helpless he had thought himself. But the Powrys had long ago found the answer to the imposing, seemingly impregnable behemoths. One after another, the giants fell, and the Powrys rolled along, berets glowing in the afternoon sun. Cormac and Milkayla collected the stunned Branson as they rushed to catch up.
We'll be at the ice castle within